For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When was the last time you got rewarded for brushing your teeth? Well, with Quip's smart electric toothbrush, good habits create great rewards, like free products or gift cards and more. So start getting rewards for brushing your teeth today. Go to getquip.com/onion right now to save $10 on a Quip smart electric toothbrush. That's $10 off smart electric toothbrush at getquip.com/onion. Now that's spelled getquip.com/onion. Quip, the good habits company.
Harmonize with me and hold me tight all through the night. You're shining bright. I'm your oyster, baby. You're my pearl.
Hello, everyone, and welcome again
to the Friendship Onion.
Welcome, everyone, to the Friendship Onion. And Billy, may I be the first to welcome you to the Friendship Onion, welcoming people to the Friendship Onion.
Then I would like to welcome you, who have also welcomed the people and me to the Friendship Onion.
You're welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome, everyone.
Now, it's great to see you, Tom.
It's been a little while, hasn't it? We often see each other of a weekend.
I haven't seen you this
weekend. Or possibly
weekend.
Of a midweek. And this week, we've both been kind of busy running around.
This week has flown in, woo! As they say.
Ran around like our arse is on fire.
Isn't it been? I've been like a blue arse fly.
And it's been roasting hot in LA, and I've been desperately trying to keep my garden alive by watering it. But because it's so hot, I can't really garden between the hours of 11 and 5. So I have to do it before or after. But my garden's really struggling.
Just leave it.
No.
But as
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Is that not what would happen in nature?
Yes, but I have a lot of plants that don't necessarily naturally fit in that. You have a lot of lovely drought-tolerant cactus and succulents and hardy things like rosemaries and irises. I have some delicate things that need water. So you try and keep them alive now, and then as you move into the autumnal winter months,
gets cooler.
The roots grow and they get strong and hardy. So that's what I'm trying.
So give them, do what you can, Tom.
A little bit of water. Anything to report this week? Everything been tickety-boo?
Everything seems pretty good. Wait, you see my knee guy?
Yeah, what did she say?
Still a bit wobbly, so we're working on strength.
Right.
And flexibility.
Strength of the knee and also trying to get the arse bigger.
Yeah, because the strength of the knee comes from all over. You could have a weak ankle that could affect your knee.
Wow. And when you say, because you've said it a while now, that you need to get your arse bigger, it's the cheeks, not necessarily the hole. Or would the hole get bigger with the cheeks, or do you want the hole to stay the same size as it is now?
Oh, the hole will not in any way influence your knee.
So you're not working out the hole.
Mm-mm.
The cheeks.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to get the cheeks, would you say twice as big as they are now?
The size doesn't matter. I'm not going to get in for any sort of competition.
Right.
It's mainly for stability and strength in the knee.
Okay.
So dense muscle is what I need.
Well, I wish you luck with that.
Thank you.
You and I have been watching some quite fantastic television this week.
Oh, it's been good, yeah.
Two things really stood out to me. Do you remember our fantastic astronaut guest that we had a while back? And he said to us, you must watch this documentary about the Apollo missions on Netflix.
I remember that.
I watched that the night before last.
Wow. Well,
it's fantastic.
Can you remember the name of it?
I think it's called Apollo something. Right. I'll send you a little
link to
it.
Thank you. I'd like to watch that.
It's great. It's very emotional. Oh, it was called Apollo 6, John said. Apollo 11, John said. He did 11, that. Yeah. But then he did that.
Yeah.
It's called Apollo 11. It's great. It's quite emotional at the end, fraught with danger, and you have a massive amount of respect for the people in the control room.
Oh, yeah.
As well as the astronauts. That's what it deals with more than anything else, is the people in the control room.
I look forward to that, Dom.
Mission control.
Well, they've got a big job.
Oh, my God, do they ever.
What else were you watching?
Well, another thing that has just been amazing this week, and I reluctantly binged it. I didn't mean to, but I just couldn't stop watching it. Is this documentary on Hulu called McCartney 321, which is
brilliant.
Rick Rubin and Paul McCartney sat down just talking through his music. You watched it as well, right?
I just watched the first episode. How many is there?
Six, I think.
Right, cool. Yeah, fantastic. I'll watch another one today. I really liked it.
I loved it. And there's so much that I loved about it. But one of my favorite things, it sounds a little egomaniacal in terms of McCartney, but I don't think it was. He takes so much joy in music. Now, of course, he's listening to his own music, but a lot of times he might be listening to a piccolo trumpet in Penny Lane or, you know, a tuba player on Sgt. Pepper's. So he's not getting super excited about his voice or his music, but every so often he will get stoked on his bass playing. But he just is so excited and stoked on music, you know. He's amazing.
I love how his mind thinks. He's always thinking in harmony and counter melodies. He's never really sort of going, oh yeah, that melody, blah blah blah. He's always like, he's always on a different, like when they were talking about While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and they pulled down everything and left the bass up, and Rick Rubin was saying, that just sounds like a totally different song. And then Paul McCartney started singing a totally different melody. He said, this could be this. And I loved that the band were so kind of close by that time that Paul McCartney could play a bass line like that that totally sounds like a different song.
Yeah.
And how his musical mind thought of doing that is brilliant. Because you might have done that with a counter melody on a voice, but to do it with the bass.
Yeah. He's such a unique brilliant talent, McCartney. I mean, he obviously plays the bass, the guitar left-handed. I wonder what that does to people, because, you know, he's playing it in a way that is slightly unnatural to him. Right?
Yeah.
But then the other thing is he started learning acoustic guitar and then obviously electric guitar, and no one wanted to play bass. George Harrison is the best guitarist in the Beatles, so he said, there's no way I'm playing bass. And Lennon was like, well, no, I'm the front man. I'm going to play rhythm to go along with the band, the drive of the band. So McCartney's like, okay, I'll play bass. But instead of approaching it as, I'll be the bass player keeping that kind of bass line, he almost plays lead bass, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's brilliant. And Rick Rubin had said that he is relatively coy about his bass guitar playing and the influence that it's had over the years. But it must have told bass guitarists, you don't have to sit in the background just following along with the bass drum. You can lead forward. People like, you know, The Jam has a very strong lead bass, doesn't it? Or The Police has a very strong lead bass. I'm sure that must be influenced by McCartney.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny, man. My wonderful dad is quite snooty about McCartney. You know, like, I liked his early stuff in the Beatles, but then when he got a bit wacky, I'm not kind of into him. I'm like, well, I said this to my dad last time. I'm like, this is the guy that wrote Yesterday. This is the guy that wrote Blackbird. This is the guy that wrote Here, There and Everywhere, you know. I wonder if maybe with my dad, it's because he's a peer. You know, they're the same-ish age. So it's hard to kind of, you know, see his brilliance, whatever. And my dad said, well, you know, he's not as influential as he used to be, but it's difficult to sustain that Beatles level of influence.
And also, I think, I could be wrong here, but I think your dad likes sort of off-center artists, doesn't he?
Yeah, he likes Leonard Cohen and Dylan. And
yeah, so people who are... Garfunkel. Whereas I think McCartney did music in a different way. You know, he definitely touched on deep stuff, you know, but I think he was much more interested, as we've said, about melody and harmony and changes in tempo. Like all the Wing stuff where it just sounds like there's four songs stuck together.
Yeah.
All that stuff is much more McCartney and takes as much, if not more skill than, you know, some of the stuff that people would think of as more off-centre. I think some people get a thing against McCartney because they think he's too middle of the road.
Yeah.
And I think that's because it's, you know...
He's into
silly
melody,
little love like songs.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he writes about that, but actually the melody and the harmony, and that's why he went on to orchestrate it and stuff.
Right.
You know, he's got that mind.
He won an Ivor Novello Award for that. I mean, he very much wants to write catchy songs that hook into your head. That was a driving force, it seems, for Paul McCartney. Whereas I think if you look at Lennon and, like, you know, something like Revolution 9 as an example, he just thought, well, I want to make art and I want it to smash you over the head. There's a great Rolling Stone interview with Lennon where he's interviewed by Jan Wenner, who was the editor of Rolling Stone and the creator of the Rolling Stone magazine. And Lennon's talking about Marcel Duchamp, the artist. And he said, I love him. I love the fact that he took a bicycle and he put it in a corner of the room. And he said, that's art. You deal with that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was one of the things with Lennon where he's like, I'm going to challenge what you think is art by saying, I'm an artist. Take this. And people are like, oh, I don't like that. He's like, well, I don't care. I'm an artist. And I think McCartney's almost the antithesis of that, right? He's like, I'm going to give you melodies. I'm going to give you different tones. I'm going to give you orchestra.
I'm going to learn how to play this instrument really well, and I'm going to play it the best that I can, and look how beautiful that is. It's amazing that they met together and created that amazing thing.
It's a brilliant documentary. If you guys are interested in Paul McCartney, if you're interested in how music is made, if you're interested in the Beatles, check out McCartney 321 on Hulu. It's fantastic.
And also, Rick Rubin seems like a lovely guy.
Yeah.
And the beard, the hair, the shorts.
Brilliant.
He looks so comfortable.
Brilliant.
He
features quite heavily in the Beastie Boys documentary, and he had a lot to do with them turning a corner from naughty little daring rappers into actually a band doing something significant. Yeah, Rick Rubin's a very
amazing,
smart guy.
Good.
Well, should we bring Rosie in?
I think we should, because he's an amazing man.
Let's have a lovely chat with our wonderful friend, Michael Rosenbaum. Guys, should we start with a song, since there's three people here, two of which are in bands?
You just gave me a fright there.
Really?
You scared me. I was looking the other way.
Hang on, I'll do that thing that conductors do. Oh, I don't have a pen. I'll do it.
What have you got?
I'll do it with my khaki.
Right.
You know how conductors do that?
Yeah. Oh, we should be tuning up before khaki? That, though.
I heard, I'll do it with my cocky.
My
that's what I heard.
Please don't do it with that.
My car key. You know how the old, an F sharp. Ready? Just join in when you want.
Looking from a window above, it's like a story of love. Can you hear me? Seems like only yesterday, moving farther away. Don't you need me?
Here we go.
All I wanted was the love you gave. All I needed for another day, and all I ever knew, only you.
Wow, guys.
That was fun.
That could not have been nicer.
What a lovely introduction to lovely Michael Rosenbaum.
Hey, y'all.
Hi, Rosie. How's it going, Michael?
I'm really excited to be here. I'm excited to be on your podcast for once.
We're excited to have you. And Rosie's here because he's basically the spin doctor of all of this, isn't he, Bills?
He is the guy that started the friendship onion.
Yeah.
By accident.
Yeah.
Is that true?
In your home.
Kind of.
Kind of. I mean, are you talking about because you guys, I guess you did the pilot.
Yeah.
The first episode at my house in my studio.
Yeah.
And you weren't sure what the hell you wanted to do or what you were doing, but you said, let's do it.
He said, Michael, Dom, said, Michael will probably let us use his equipment for free. And I said, if it's for free, I'm in.
He's in.
Well, there it was.
I described you as a mensch.
A mensch.
Which is a fantastic word in Yiddish that means a generous
good,
man,
good,
person.
Good man. Good man.
You are very menschy.
Well, I try to be. Mm. I don't think I always am.
Oh, okay.
But my intentions are usually that.
With
I feel
me,
like
you've
I
always
be.
Been... moderately
well,
menschy.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're a medium mensch.
I'm hard on myself, though.
Wow.
Are you not hard on yourself?
I don't think I am that hard on myself.
No, if anything, you could be harder on yourself. But you, Michael.
That's a good observation.
Exactly. Well.
I enjoy your podcast a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you, man.
Inside of you.
Inside of you with Michael Rosenbaum, yeah.
I really enjoy it. I was just listening to one coming up, and I like...
You listen to one that's coming up?
No, I
you
listened to one future. As I was driving up. I was listening to one with Seth Green, actually, and it had a lot of really great things in it, because I think you let people relax, and then you get inside of them.
Yeah, you know, people always ask me. It's funny. People come up to me or they'll email me and say, hey, you know, I really love your podcast and this. And I honestly think I'm surprised because it could go either way. I never listen to them. I just interview and I'm like, okay, I'm sort of like just a regular person asking questions. Like, so I feel sort of like an idiot. Remember that Chris Farley show on Saturday Night Live where he's like, Paul McCartney, you're a Beatle. Idiot! Stupid! What are you doing? So I don't, it's not like that, but in a sense, I'm just going, do you ever get scared when you're auditioning? Do you ever get, and I just start going down a rabbit hole of questions, and people think it's just really conversational and fun, and I love doing it.
It is.
And I have ADD. Right. So, but when I put these cans on, they call them cans, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's technical talk.
I learned it.
Lovely.
But when I start to focus, because I can hear your voice, so it's nice.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or maybe preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is a professional counselling done securely online. There is a broad range of expertise available which may not be locally available in many areas. And this service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counsellor. Visit betterhelp.com/onion. That's better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counsellors in all 50 states. Special offer for the Friendship Onion listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/onion. Committing to a fitness routine can be hard. Trying to find the time, getting to the gym, all that stuff, not easy. Peloton makes it much easier. And now, with $400 off their original bike, there's never been a better time to start your fitness revolution. I use a Peloton bike and I love it. I think it's fantastic. I'm not one for making plans and routines, so I just find some time in the day, 15 minutes, half an hour, 45 minutes, when I'll jump on the bike and get a great workout. Lots of classes to choose from, lots of styles of music, styles of instructor. You can find the perfect thing just for you. And I've started using it for their strength training as well, which is fantastic. You can get outside, lift some weights. It feels good. Experience motivation like never before with the Peloton bike. Now $400 less. Go to onepeloton.com to learn more. That's onepeloton.com.
I wonder if that's what it is, Rosie, that maybe in that hour and a half, 2 hours where you are sat with the mic and the cans on, you do become focused. Because I think you are a very focused interviewer. In the couple of times that you and I have sat down, and then I sat down with Bills as well.
That was a good one.
I remember saying to you, it's going to be a kind of rolling chat, but he is going to get into it, which is the whole thing about inside you, right?
Right. I don't just get into it. Like, yeah. I think if you just are there to ask questions and you have a list of questions, it comes off kind of cold, and anybody can do that. Anyone can have a list of questions and ask you. But for me, I just kind of go, outside when you were coming in the house, you said this thing and it made me laugh. And then we just start talking.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Rainn Wilson from The Office.
Yeah.
Every time I name drop, you have to drop something. So Rainn Wilson was at the house.
I dropped my water.
Drop the beat.
Drop your wallet?
Yeah. No, Jesus Christ, water.
Pick that up. Know if he dropped his wallet because it would crack the floorboards. Yeah. It's massive.
But your leg.
Rainn Wilson came over and I go, hey, how you doing, man? Thanks for coming over. He goes, yeah, my dog just died. I'm like, fuck. Can you say fuck?
Yeah, you can say shit and balls on this show.
Oh, I heard you don't swear very often, though.
I don't, actually. I don't. I keep That's it bollocks. In. I keep it all in like a cancer eating my stomach.
Oh. But anyway, Rainn came in and said his dog died. So the first thing I said was, like, you just came in here and you said your dog died. Why are you here?
Yeah,
because you're a dog guy, aren't you? And then he just opened up and he got a little emotional. And I think when people hear about my dysfunction and I open up about who I am and what I've been, you know, they tend to open up.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's part of it.
So when you say dysfunction, you said you had ADHD, which is attention deficit.
Well,
we don't know
these things in Britain. Just I think attention deficit disorder. I think a lot of people will say they have it, but I mean anybody who knows me knows that if I'm in a conversation or something, usually, and I just hear a song, I go, "Oh, I love this song. Who sings this?" And I'm like, "Dude, I'm freaking talking to you." Isn't that everyone?
Or do we just both have ADD? Like if I'm talking to you, and then your wife comes in and says something, I can easily be distracted by Billy's wife. Is that ADD?
I'm slightly distracted just now.
Bye.
Michael says when he puts on the cans, he focuses.
Yeah.
He's not put the cans on.
No, he's not.
You've only got one side of the can on.
I've adopted this.
I feel like I'm the only person that's focused at the minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Now I'm focused.
Is that better?
I think so.
Turn it up a little bit.
How's that?
Is
that better?
No, that's good for me. I'm good. I'm good.
Oh, you're good. I think I'm good.
They look massive on you because of your tiny little head.
I'm normally in charge of that thing.
Yeah.
And now Michael's taken over.
Yeah, no,
by the thing way, with the volumes.
By the way, I noticed you have good facial hair, and I shaved my beard, and I tried to have a little mustache, and it's kind of embarrassing. You're laughing at it.
I think you look good.
No, it's kind of embarrassing. I don't know. I just tried it.
Give it a few days, though. It's not quite grown in yet, right? It'll grow thicker than that.
I don't know.
Really?
I never really do. I mean, maybe a little thicker.
My brother, Matthew. Hello, Matthew, if you're watching. My brother grows fantastic facial hair. Like, he can do, like, Spanish conquistador kind of mustaches.
I wish I could do that.
Kind of come around like this. And sometimes my brother will do really weird things where he'll shave all of his face apart from this bit and this bit, and then he'll just let it grow to see what happens. It's weird, and you think that's not going to work. It does, it works.
Yeah, that's not for me. What about you? I've never imagined you with facial hair.
I have. I grew a fantastic beard a few years ago.
I can attest to
like
that.
Like a full-on beard that just took over.
Like a fisherman.
It was
like
great.
A Peter Jackson beard?
Mm. Like, yeah.
Yeah, like a young Gandalf.
Like a full-on... You know, inches of beard.
And it looked good?
Chris it looked great.
Yeah.
And I feel
Chris
like...
Christopherson. Mm-hmm.
I feel like people really took me more serious, you know?
Mm. Oh, there's Billy Boyd.
It's
not
wild.
Only that,
get serious.
Not only that, Bills, but that was at a time where you grew the beard for a Shakespearean role. So when someone's coming over to you saying, I like your beard, and you go, well, it's for my Shakespearean role, then people have to take you
seriously. Playing Banquo.
I'm playing Banquo.
You were Banquo in Macbeth?
Yeah.
That's a good role.
Yeah, it was good. I was a good ghost.
I was...
Don't tell me.
I can't remember.
Malcolm.
No, no. It was
Macduff.
No, it was a smaller
part. It would have
been
great if it was Malcolm, because he's in the middle.
Ross!
You would be a wonderful Ross, my sir!
'Tis called the evil, a most miraculous work of this good king. Oh, I don't remember at all.
Oh, I love that, though.
That was very good.
That was
it?
Great.
Was it, really?
Yeah.
I was thinking about this earlier. It's like when you guys talk, I mean, people are just, I think they tend to listen more because you just sound smart and you've got that accent. But and I wish I had an accent.
Not in Britain. In Britain, we just sound like everyone else. Yeah.
Is that true? I guess that is true. But here, you sound smarter. You could say the stupidest thing and still come off smart.
Right.
That's good to know.
Yeah, I have
heard It's that. True. Don't you guys agree out there? I mean, when they speak, it sounds smarter than if I, for instance, I'll say something.
Okay.
Oh my God, last night I had the worst diarrhea. Now, that's how I say it. Now you say it and see if it sweetens it a little.
Oh my God, last night I had the worst diarrhea.
That was very
sexier really? For sure.
Deeper.
You?
Oh, last night I had the worst diarrhea.
See? It just is more acceptable. People are like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. For me, they're like, oh, you're a pig.
Does anyone actually remember the last time they had diarrhea?
No.
No, it's been a while, knock on wood.
I was
bloated about a week ago.
Oh, what did you do? Were you eating a bunch of bread?
Well, for my birthday, I had Buca di Beppo, and I ate far too much and really stuffed myself, and I've never done this before. I was so full that I actually had to make myself throw up.
Oh, wow.
And I've never done that. And I go, because my friend goes, listen, make yourself throw up. And I go, why are you telling me to do that? Do you do that? I hope you don't do that. I go, no. But if you're really that full and it hurts, just get rid of it, because I felt like it was up there.
Did you not feel like instead of that, the first thing you could do is maybe just go and try for a shite?
I was too bloated. I didn't think I had to poop. Couldn't. I think it was, at first it was...
I hate that feeling when it's stuck like up here.
Yeah, that's what happens. I was really bloated.
You had that? Yes. Also, if anyone out there can help me with this problem, doesn't happen as much anymore, but I went through a period of, I've told you this before, pooping food. Actual food.
Like a piece of broccoli and it's full...
Blueberries. Maybe, a piece of a carrot, mainly fruit and vegetables. Other stuff would, like, break
That's
down.
That's weird.
But I was astounded. I would turn around and be like, that is my dinner. There's that bit of my dinner.
And here's the thing. It's specifically for Dom, that would be disturbing, because I don't know if you know this about Dom. He can be quite good at spending money, but then for small things...
Frugal.
Very frugal. Yeah. Very really? Tight very with frugal. His money. Yeah. So see if he'd spent money... on, say, organic, a punnet of organic blueberries, and he pooped them out.
It's a waste.
I could see him digging through that and eating it again.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I was in a survival situation, for sure.
Because he would not like the idea that he'd spent $4 on a punnet of organic blueberries only to poo it straight through with no vitamin.
I get it from my dad. I'm all about bargains. We were on a flight back from New York last week, and I'm chatting to Billy about 2 hours into the flight, and I come over and I go, you on the internet? He went, yeah, I got Wi-Fi. I went, free? He went, no. I went, oh no, I'm not getting that. He was like,
really?
You're not paying for the flight, you've not paid for the hotel, we're getting all this cash to do this appearance, and you're not going to pay, like, what was it, $10 on the flight?
Yeah.
I was like, no, it's not free.
Why is that?
I'm weirdly, because in my mind,
growing up, I bet it had something to do with it.
Yeah, my dad is, both my parents are good with money. They're not cheap in any way, but they're both, they're careful. And I think both my parents gave my brother and I less pocket money than we actually needed. So if we needed £7.50, they'd give us a fiver and be like, well, you work it out. Wash my car for £2 and then you'll get £7 instead. So they always made us kind of work that extra bit. And in my mind, on the flight, not only do I enjoy being away from Wi-Fi for a few hours and being like, I have to watch a movie, I have to play Nintendo Switch or whatever, but the other thing is, well, I could wait, and in 4 or 5 hours, then I'll have the treat of emails and... messages and
that's
stuff.
That's
like
true.
That.
I understand that. Yeah. I can understand that part, but I'm definitely one, because my dad was always very frugal, and so were my grandparents. Everybody was always, it was always about this. And I just wanted to be the opposite. I wanted to be a big tipper. I wanted to, if I want something and I can afford it, I'm getting it.
Cool.
I don't think twice about it. I'm smart with my money, but I'm also, I'll spend my money.
Billy taught me one of the most important life lessons, probably the most important life lesson that I've got from you so far.
Wow.
Yeah. Just yellow, never eat yellow snow. No, it was, we were in New Zealand. You know this story. We're in New Zealand, very early days shooting, maybe even rehearsing. We're walking around in the daytime. It's lunchtime. And we walk past the McDonald's, and I say, well, should we just jump in here? We'll just get a quick burger and we can carry on with our day. And Billy's like, no, it's lunch now. I'm going to go take myself to lunch and have that hour-long experience of lunch. I'm not going to waste it on a five-minute crappy little burger. And at the time, it didn't really resonate. But over the next couple of years, I thought, actually, three opportunities a day to really enjoy and make a decision of self-love as opposed to self-abuse or, you know, just...
Wow.
And that came from you.
You know, well done, mate.
Yeah, you do eat relatively well, don't you? I've never seen you eat a McDonald's.
No, I can't think of the last time I'd eaten a McDonald's.
What's the naughtiest food? I mean, you and I will eat pizza here and there.
Oh, I'll eat pizza.
But it's good pizza.
I'll eat like Haribo gums.
Why?
I love those gums.
I don't know what Haribo gums are.
Haribo, you know, like...
Haribos.
Haribo.
You know those
gums
and they're chewy? And you can get them fizzy sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The
snakes and stuff.
You know, like, what are those fizzy...
Yeah, cola
yeah,
bowls.
All these kind of things.
I Razzles.
Yeah, Razzles.
Kind of Razzles.
Sure. Haribo.
Haribo balls. By the way, you just said... You guys were just talking about that. You kind of flew over it pretty fast.
I apologize.
But no, when you say you take that hour, I'm going to have lunch. That automatically gave me a feeling inside that... I kind of rush through things. I kind of just, I'm like, oh, I have to eat now, so let's just eat fast and get it over with. Mm. I have to do this. Let's get that over with. And that's something I really have to work on. I have to learn how to, I don't know, for lack of a better word, like relish the moment. I have to learn how to just be in the moment and be like, hey, you have a meal here. You don't have to scarf it down. You have the time to relax. It's probably healthier. But I don't do that. I think I rush through life. I'm going to be honest with you. I know I need to work on it. I need to work on just being more present, more relaxed, breathe a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, mastication is extremely important.
I don't know where that was going.
Chewing, especially as you get older and older. But in terms of, so Billy's naughty thing is like Haribo. Mine is probably Haribo as well. What's your naughty little, oh, I feel ashamed of myself, treat when you're in the house on your own, your dog looks at you like?
He will eat so much that he'll have to make himself sick.
I only did that once that night after Buka, which I loved. Thank you for the meal, Buka.
But is there something where you're like, I know I shouldn't be eating this, but I love it?
Yeah. I have frozen White Castle burgers in the freezer.
Never had them.
Never heard of White Castle.
I've heard of White Castle.
Oh,
is that square?
That's Wendy's.
They're a square, tiny burger, and there's establishments like White Castle and Crystal, and they're not healthy. But I remember as a kid, I think it's the nostalgia of it all, my dad would order like 35 of them, and
fuck,
we would scarf down these little burgers, and so I saw them at the grocery store, and I keep them in my freezer, and every once in a while, I just put them in the microwave for about 45 seconds, and my burger's ready, and I'll pop one down.
Enjoy it.
When I was a kid, I used to love cereal. Eating cereal as a kid, what could be nicer? But now, when you've grown up, you realize, I can't eat that. Too much sugar. Too much junk. So what do? I'll tell you what we do. Magic Spoon cereal. Magic Spoon has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. And only 140 calories. And it's got fantastic flavours. Cocoa, fruity, frosted, my favourite, peanut butter, blueberry, cinnamon, cookies and cream, maple waffle. Subscribe today to flavour you love, and you can get cereal shipped to your doorstep, not to mention saving more than 25% on every order. You can choose 4 flavours you love, edit your subscription to switch it up, and keep yourself stocked up on cereal. Go to magicspoon.com/onion5 or use the promo code onion5 at checkout to get $5 off your order. And try it today. Remember, if you subscribe to Magic Spoon, you'll get $5 off on top of the 25% savings for subscribing. Subscribe and get your delicious guilt-free cereal on the regular at magicspoon.com/onion5 and use the code onion5 to save big. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. There's much more to nutrition than just calories. Your diet plays a huge role in your microbiome, which in turn impacts your mental and physical well-being. But now, they're learning about the connection between your gut microbiome health and type 2 diabetes. Pendulum Glucose Control is the first and only medical probiotic that's designed to manage A1C and blood glucose levels through the health of your microbiome. With Pendulum, you can feel in control of your levels, not the other way around. It's formulated and bottled in the US with the highest safety and quality standards, non-GMO project verified. Take control of your glucose levels today. Try Pendulum Glucose Control for 90 days. If you're not satisfied with your levels, you'll get your money back. Visit pendulumlife.com to find out more. And use promo code ONION for 20% off your first bottle of membership. That's PENDULUMLIFE.com, promo code ONION.
So the thing about White Castle that defines them from other people is mini sliders. They
mini,
make sliders.
I mean, mini. They're like this big.
Right.
They're really small. And they're, I mean, they're just tiny slab of meat, really soft bread. Have you had one?
Never.
I don't think I have.
Yeah, no. I don't know if you should, but... Okay.
You kind of made me feel like I would like to.
I'm kind of in the mood for a burger now.
Well, we're not going to have that just now.
No time.
We can have one after.
No time. Fine. Well, should we do a little coke?
Hold on. Hold on.
Oh, that's the angriest I've seen you in about 14 days.
We are here to hear about Michael, and he's talking about his dad and all that there, and I want to know.
Oh, you're trying to get inside of him.
Oh, no.
Where did you grow up? What part of these United States of America did you grow up?
I was born in New York, in Oceanside, New York, Oceanside, Long Island. Nassau Community Hospital, and we moved when I was a kid. My dad was like delivered newspapers, worked in a lab. We moved to Connecticut, but I really grew up in Indiana from the time I was eight. So southern Indiana, right borderline of Kentucky, and that's Indiana. Where I grew up, in a small town in Indiana.
If that was America, if my hand was America, right? Where is Indiana?
It's just west of your ring. This way, right there.
Here?
That's about where it is.
Okay, yep. Thank you. So you're down a bit south then.
Yep, southern Indiana. So kind of midwesty, southern Indiana, borderline Kentucky. It's a bit southern. I mean, I had friends who had some accent. Hey, Rose, what are you getting into tonight, man?
Ooh.
It's like, yeah, and they were just a little bit like that. And some people just, you know, if they're from Kentucky, they have a real accent.
Kentucky.
People were very laid back. You fly in Indiana, and you the second you land, you get off that plane, and you are immediately just relaxed. There's something just, I don't know what it is.
Is it because, is it very hot down there, hot and
it's
sweaty?
It's just like, it just, I don't know. I think people aren't in a rush to get everywhere.
Well, that's lovely. That's something
yeah.
to learn.
Yeah.
But that's what you want to work on.
Yeah.
That's what I want to
so
work on.
So you grew up with that. So then how did you get involved in performance and being an actor?
I didn't know what I was going to do, and I was kind of a lost soul. But I remember, like, I used to hang out with my friends and their families and spend the night at friends' houses a lot. My parents didn't really care what I was doing. They sort of were like, oh, you want to spend the night at David Eidelman's, Danny Cutter's, Nate yeah. Shepherd's? I would just spend
hey,
the
Nate.
Night. Nate, Danny, David died. David passed away. Oh, sorry to bring that up.
Yeah.
But so I was kind of a lost soul. I didn't know what I was, who I was. And mm-hmm. But I noticed I made people laugh. Like my friends' parents always thought I was funny.
Okay.
So finally, my senior year in high school, I did a play. And I was nervous as shit. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't even know if I can get in front of an audience. But I remember the next day, I'm walking down the hallway and this popular kid, Chris Perot. His name was Perot, P-I-E-R-R-O-T. And he came up to me and goes, you were really funny in that play. And he walked away. And I thought, holy shit.
Wow.
That's it. I've got to do this because the popular guy just said I'm funny. I was good in that.
Right.
And so I think growing up, I was doing it for all the wrong reasons.
What was the play?
It was Grease. Uh-huh. And I was Vince Fontaine, the wacky DJ.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The guy who comes to the dance hall.
Yeah.
Right.
But I remember doing it because it's approval. It's instant gratification. It's acceptance. And so when I was on stage, people were like, oh, you're really good. And I needed that.
Right.
And so I don't even know if there was it's taken all these years later to find out, like, do you really love doing it? I think there's some love to it, but I think I did it because it was the only thing I could do. At least I felt at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how I kind of got into it.
Do you prefer doing podcasts to acting now?
No, I really, I still want to act. I think I just want to, I'm very fortunate and grateful, but I can do the things that I want to do. So I'm not going to just do a show to do a show.
Right.
If I don't think, you know, I don't want to be on set on something I don't like just because for the money.
Right.
And, you know, if it's content that I go, wow, this would be fun. Mm-hmm. This would be a great time. Because there has to be a certain amount of joy on set. You have to go to work. Look. You're very fortunate if you get to go to work and have a good time. Most people hate their jobs. So if you have the choice to actually go to work and enjoy it and, you know, enjoy what you do, and some people, whatever they're doing, they could be on the world's shittiest television show and they don't care because they're acting. Yeah. And that's great. But for me, I want to go be able to go, you know what, I really like this role. I like the people I'm working with. I think I could really have fun and do great work.
Right.
That's the goal. So I love doing the podcast. I love writing. I'm trying to sell stuff. But, you know, look, if I needed to work, if I was broke right now, I go, Dom, you're going to do a movie in about a month. Do they need any roles?
Yeah.
They need, because I would beg you for one.
Yeah.
I would do anything. I'll
see what I can do.
I'd work at, yeah.
Part of, I always feel like, did you hear that? I sound like a whispering wind there.
No, it's good. It was good.
I always feel like part of my salary. When I say yes, when my agent eventually says, we're now at the point where we have to say yes or no. If I say yes, I feel like part of that yes, part of that payment is, regardless from now onwards, when you walk on set, you have to act like you're having a good time. Act in the role, but also act like, I'll do all the shitty whatever.
Press.
The angsty stuff, if I have it, I'll do that when I'm away from set. But walking on set with technicians and people that probably don't want to be there at all and getting paid 15 times less than me.
Right.
Part of my salary, maybe it's a guilt complex, is like, hey, how's it going? Hey, how's it going? Hey, how's it going? How's it going? Because I just think, you're getting paid. You have to set that example.
I agree with you 100%. I think when you go on set, you have to, what's the word? You have to the crew, you have to set a...
tone?
A tone.
That's, oh, nice. The, well,
that,
done.
That's good. Well done. I don't know if that was going to come out.
Yeah.
But you do. I think it's obligation we have to, you know, I always want the crew to have fun. I want to have fun. If they're having fun, if I'm having fun, they're having fun.
Yeah.
That could make for a really good product. But there's some actors who are really kind of dark and keep to themselves and don't want to talk to anybody. And that's fine. But I've always been the guy that wants to know what the director of photography's name is.
Sure.
And I want to know what the grip's name is and the gaffer. And I want to know what everybody's name is. It just makes me, I feel like it's a team effort and they're going to probably work harder for you and make you look good because they like you.
And also, don't you sometimes think that, like, I understand if someone has a very heavy day of lines and it's an angsty scene, or they're in a scene where their best friend's going to die or they're going to die or it's sad or whatever. I understand maybe you're in your head and that's your process. But, you know, I do reject this notion of whatever. Someone comes to work and they have a line in a scene that's nothing. It's throwaway. But for some reason, because whatever, they're an actor, they have to be all angsty. And this method thing, I'm just like, that's very often nowadays is an excuse to be a dickhead. Do you know what I mean? Like, Daniel Day-Lewis is method. And we see by the proof of his work that, like, it seems to really work out for Daniel Day-Lewis. And that is his process. But for someone who's 25th on the call sheet and they come in and... and they're a dickhead for no reason. They're like, well, I'm not a dickhead, I'm method. You're like, method? All you're doing is saying hi, Tony, and then walking off camera, right? Like,
do you see that? I never see
that. I sometimes see that.
Really?
I've worked with those type of people.
I always feel like guest stars are people that are way down on the call sheet. A lot of times it's harder. It's harder. Yeah. It's definitely harder for a guest star to come in and do those lines and be great and come into a whole big family that's been filming. And then, you know, usually they're nervous.
Yeah.
Usually they're just trying to get the lines out, or they're trying to... You know, I always feel for those folks.
But I definitely think it's hard. Yeah. Definitely.
Oh man, it's brutal to come in and just like, all right, here he goes. Oh yeah, he's the guest star. Yeah, let's go and action here. Let's go.
Right.
And you're like, and you could sometimes see people's lips kind of quivering. You know, people get nervous, man. Have you ever gotten nervous?
Oh my
god. Have you ever been nervous on camera?
Yeah. I think I have. I'm trying to think of specifics now, but like. being a guest star, you're absolutely right. And you, especially in a show that you watch, you know, and you come in and there's a little bit of you that's going, oh, I remember this set, you know. And I, oh, wait a minute, I'm in this now. And I've got like a page of like a speech to do or something. Right. I get a little bit nervous then. But normally it's kind of fun. I don't have the skill set
generally to work it out right. I find that I've only had it happen once, and it was recent on Star Wars. But when you clamp up and everything starts to get tight, then the lines that you've remembered fly out your head and everything's tight and your body's tight. So for me, I stay in a sense of play, in a state of play, not to be silly and goofy and so that people think I don't take my job seriously. It's to keep everything loose and free.
Yeah.
So I'm always chatting with Craig. Hey, over there. All right, that's cool.
That's really smart. That's a process. I do that too. You know who else did that? I don't know if he still does it, but I saw these behind the scenes of the making of What's Eating Gilbert Grape with Leonardo DiCaprio. And they say that he was like, you know, he was playing an intense character, a mentally challenged character. Yeah. And he would just be like, oh, and just really, and actually he's like, you know, Gilbert, and just jump into it. Mama, you know, and like he would jump into this serious role and then cut and then just playful and doing all shit and making people laugh. I don't know if he still does it. But I go, oh, cool, somebody else does that.
As a process. Because he's drove Johnny Depp crazy, supposedly, on that film. Because he was like that the entire time, and they've obviously become friends later. And Johnny Depp has said in the press, he said, oh, he drove me crazy. Because all he did was jump around being silly. But I think that was DiCaprio's process of staying loose and improvisational in his role, you know. I flew to London to do this very small role in Star Wars. And JJ said to me, You won't have the script until the night before. But don't worry about it, because we're going to change it the following morning.
That would make my nerves rattle.
Oh, it was crazy. So he said, we went out for dinner that night. And as we were leaving dinner, he said, you'll have pages back at your room. But he said, try not to worry about them too much, because by the time we get into work the next day, they'll be different. I was like, okay, fine, whatever. And he said, it's a chunk, but don't worry about it.
That's not cool.
Well, whatever,
that
it's fine.
That's my biggest nightmare. Yeah, I don't learn lines fast.
Right. It was definitely an issue. So, but I said to Bills, the irony now is I'll never forget this line, but on the day, fuck if I could remember it. So I had to say, it was cut from the movie, because obviously it did not work, and they gave the stuff to Daisy instead. But the line was, you can't get to Exegol. You need a supraluminite lodestone star compass attuned to hyperspace vectors.
Fuck you, JJ. Hey, JJ, I love your movies. Fuck you.
So, and that was the first line.
And they kept, how many times did they have to repeat it to you?
Oh, mate. So I have to say that. Then a couple of characters talk, and then I have this chunk. It's about half a page of dialogue. Exposition. So JJ came over, he said, over by where that globe is, he said, there's a camera on, what, have you seen the Panaconda? It's like the biggest crane for a Panavision camera. They call it the Panaconda. It's massive. So he said, we're going to start the camera on the Panaconda. Just do some business, you know, press some dials and stuff. He said, the camera's going to come over. Everyone's going to do some business. And as you feel the camera kind of get to here, as it rests and settles, start your line. I'm like, all right, fine. Done this before, no worries. But there's all droids and monsters and creatures moving over. And as it's coming over, I'm thinking, I don't know my first line. Oh. So I try and do it. You need a, sorry, Jay. And he goes, no worries. We'll reset. We'll go again. But the reset is like 3 minutes, because the camera has to go back, the droids, the monsters. So now I'm thinking, if I keep asking him to reset, if I do that four times, that's 15, 20 minutes wasted. And this is Star Wars, and they do not have time on this set. And eventually Jay came over and he was like, it's fine. But we do need you to kind of get it now. And I'm like, yeah.
How many takes?
We probably, before we got it, we probably did 8, 10, something like that.
But if I've not got it
in 3 takes, I feel like.
You know
like
what I would have said? JJ, with all due respect, I don't learn, you gave me these lines, I don't learn lines fast. I need to have them soak in.
You know what?
Just have somebody have a thing. We'll do it in one take. I'll nail it.
Yeah, I could do that. It's you know, JJ.
That's terrifying.
Jay's like
I've had that.
A close personal friend of mine.
I know.
You're playing with the big boys there. And also, he's put his trust in me for good or bad reason. He said to the studio, I got just the guy for this. And they're like, you do realize he's going to come in and do a page of dialogue day one, jet lagged. He's like, I got the guy. So when he says to you, to me, you're the guy, I can't then go, I am your guy. Could you just put it on a card and give me a minute? And so I was like, I got it. And I did get it.
Were you thinking of write it down?
No, I was just, you know what? Oscar Isaac was really cool with me. They were all really cool. But Oscar saw what was going on. He could see that I was in my head. And he knew, I don't know how, he must have just guessed, he knew that I needed to be in a state of play. So he just started goofing off of me. My character was called Beaumont. He'd be like, ah, Beaumont, come on, you got this thing. Come on, let's go again. We'll reset. And it brought me out of the tightness. And then I got it. And I said it to him afterwards, and I was like, thanks for that. He was like, hey, man.
Say the line again.
You can't get to Exegol. You need a super illuminite lodestone star compass attuned to hyperspace vectors. Fuck if I could get it that day.
How long for you to learn that?
I think if I sat in my trailer for 4 days, I don't know. I think I could probably get it like within. I mean, did you have the morning to kind of get it?
I had the morning.
I would want to sleep on that one.
That's what I'm saying. I want to sleep on
it. I'd
rest
like to know
it and
fall asleep.
Know it inside out. Yeah. Dream about it. Almost when you say the lines before you go to bed. You go to bed. You go, I know these. And you wake up. It's a new
day. Yeah, it's a great feeling, but I did not.
It's not a good. I once had. Hey, we're gonna shoot a scene from the next episode.
Is it Smallville?
Today. Smallville? Yeah. Okay. And I had that on another thing. They gave me this scene the day of, and they go, we're shooting it after lunch. And it's just chunks of dialogue for 3 pages. And I go, my whole day is ruined.
Right.
I'm just trying to learn this. You've ruined my day.
What season are you in here?
I don't even know. It's probably season 2 or 3. It was early on. Okay. But still. And then I remember Wes Craven. I worked for Wes Craven. I had this monologue, and he just goes, I'm telling you, I think we did 14 takes. Mm-hmm. 14 takes. And it was just because he wanted a certain way. And I don't know. I was doing it, trying to do it his way without even understanding why. Mm-hmm. I just was like, and I loved him. I just wanted to make him happy. And he was really cool about it. And we finally got it. And then the last take, he goes, now do it like Christopher Walken. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Because he knows I do impressions and stuff. So it turned out okay. But there have been some times on set where I'm like, I don't want to act anymore. Please get me on a first plane to Egypt or somewhere out of the fuck of this country. I can't do this. I'm not capable. And then there's been some times where I'm like, you're genius.
Yeah.
You're fucking so good. And then so bad. It's just.
That's been my only day ever on set. And Jay said a really amazing thing where I spoke to him afterwards and I was like, how did that look? He was like, it looks fine. And I went, oh, because I was having a nightmare that day. He said, that's fine. It's fine. It looks great. Looks fantastic. Don't worry about it. And then later on, we were out for dinner. And I said to him, man, that day that's my least favorite day ever on set. And I think I was having an out-of-body experience, you know, anxiety kind of moment. And he turned to me and he said, well, if that's the first time it's ever happened to you, then you were owed one. Because he said, most of the time that I'm working with actors, it'll happen at least once a production for one person. So everyone's having it in at least one time for each actor in every one of his productions. So he said the fact that it's happened just once in your career, I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I remember getting to a point on Lost. There were obviously days where I was like, oh, this is a bit challenging. But I remember getting to a point on Lost where they'd be like, you know, we would shoot 10, 11, sometimes 12 pages a day. And they, same with you, they'd come to us at lunch and they'd be like, we're doing really well today, so we're going to pull this scene and it'll be a 3-page scene. And you'd be like, yeah, okay, I got it. And you'd think, I could do that over lunch, no problem. And the honing of the muscle would get so tight because you're expected to perform at that level. And then, you know, you can relax and drop into it. So I did feel that. Did you feel that on Smallville?
Yeah, I think eventually it was a lot easier.
How many seasons
lines.
Of Smallville?
I did 7.
Damn.
But, you know, I always took it so seriously, though, and I wanted to know my lines inside out and have a day or two with them so where I could just talk to you like I am now and just grab this drink while I'm speaking and continue my dialogue without even flinching, not practicing in front of a mirror, not just be raw and real and just loose. So whenever somebody gives you something when you don't have a lot of time, it means that you're not going to have the freedom to really know it inside out, to really just... It's part of you,
yeah.
You know, and that is something that I need as an actor. I'm not. I mean, I'll get it done. I'll somehow figure it out. But I'm not afraid. I've never done it. But if I really thought you're just going to kill yourself, I'd say get cue cards out. I don't give a fuck. Get a cue card out, put it right there in camera, and I'll make it real. I'll make it sound real.
Yeah.
I'm not going to torture you guys with this.
Right.
I'm not going to torture myself with it. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, there are tricks that work, right?
Yeah. Or, you know, there's has it happened to you?
I try, you son of a bitch.
He's very professional.
I like to know my lines really well. Same as you. I like to kind of feel as if, you know, if something happens, you've got the freedom to kind of let that happen, you know. There was one time, actually, I was doing a guest star on a TV show, and I was supposed to do the big scenes later on. So I did know them, but not as well as I wanted to. And they started with, like, the biggest, you know, like 4 pages of just monologue, basically. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me to be packing a bag at the same time. So, and I love, I was saying this before to Dom, I love the technicals of a movie or TV. I love to get the continuity right. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of the editor going, oh, he's given me a really good editing mm-hmm. point there. I love all that stuff. So to then be packing a bag while I'm doing a monologue that I didn't really know, I remember that annoyed me that day because I was like, yeah. I can't remember when I picked that up. I can't remember when I put that down. Mm. You know, by the time they went to the second take, the third take, and I was like, oh, I was starting to get me, you know, annoyed. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I have, yeah.
You I've also, I think this is a slightly educated guess, but you also subscribe to the, footsie. Mm-hmm. You also subscribe to the idea of don't let people see you sweat, right? You're kind of that person.
Yeah.
You don't want people
I don't want people to see me sweat either.
Some
I agree
actors come on set with the pages and they do a little, okay, wait, I'm doing this. And I think you kind of are like, I've got this.
Yeah, probably.
Don't need.
That's how I am. Yeah. I don't even bring sides.
Right.
Like, you want to run lines? All right, great. Let's do it. Boom, 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 boom. I like to do that. I rarely have sides.
I'll sometimes have sides, but maybe they'll be rolled up so I can't look at them. I'll be
holding them, but... I like to just kind of be like free. I know this stuff. Let's do it. Let's rock it. I'm not thinking about it. I'm not thinking about it till we're rolling.
Right.
But when I'm thinking about it and I don't have it and I don't have it, and they're throwing, hey, let's add this. I don't like that stuff. I don't like to go, hey, we're going to change this line. We're going to this. I go, yeah, but I say that. Then they say something else, which then I have to. It's a whole new reprogramming. Right, on. Right. It's just not something my brain is capable. I think some people are great at it.
It's so funny how actors are all different, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
My favorite thing with a director is if we do take one and they like it, and then we cover ourselves with take two, I love it when a director comes over to me and says, we've got it. Just going to slightly change it now. Just slightly tweak it. Lines are going to kind of stay the same, but maybe we want you to do this and that. So in take three, the freshness now is that I'm thinking there's a slightly new piece of business or there's a slightly new way of exiting or entering, and that just, it just spices everything up. So that's my favorite, is the director saying, we've got it. Here's a new thing to think about. It's my all-time favorite thing.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
Love that note.
I like a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I was going to say something and it's fallen out of my brain.
It's interesting hearing your guys' perspectives on that.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I like the fact that all actors... All actors' processes I'm totally fine with, unless, like I said, I have a real bee in my bonnet of people saying, well, that's my process, and their process is at the expense of everyone else's process, and they can be a dickhead. You're like, well, what if the cameraman's process is to be a dickhead?
Yeah.
Would you be all right with that?
You mixed your fucking mark.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You're another inch over.
Right.
What are you doing, Christian Bale?
Right.
Get over there.
Yeah.
Yeah? No, true.
Little bits like that. Also, you were saying that thing about when you start to get the props and stuff at the right time. Uh-huh. Bills and I have noticed a few times, sometimes we'll be recording something at home, the two of us. And once we get into the flow, our timing is exactly the same, right?
Yeah.
Billy's son he'll cut at the end and we'll go,
same time.
How long was that, Jack? He'll go, 1:17. We're like, okay, cool. We'll do it again. How long is that? 1:17. We're like, oh my God. Like, It's a muscle.
It's like women with their periods. That's right. How you guys are.
We tune in.
Yeah.
Right? It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Beautiful thing.
That was good, wasn't it, Dom?
Isn't he lovely, DeRozan?
Isn't he just... I really like spending time with him.
Hey, before we go...
Yeah?
Should we do a little League of Legends update. Because there has been some...
There's been movement.
Movement.
As they might say if you were constipated.
Yes, yeah, a little bit of movement.
Has there been any movement?
Oh, it's put a road right through me, though.
Oh, good news. Good news.
Right, so we have been tracking the progress of Elijah Jordan Wood and Sean Astin playing League of Legends with
will
us.
Will they be joining our team, which will go pro?
We will go pro.
Point.
Yeah, we'll be called, we'll just call the Hobbits, I guess.
Yeah, no.
Last week, and for a couple of weeks running, Elijah has been, for me, a lemon seed.
Yeah, you've not been pleased.
Which, just to recap, a strawberry seed is the lowest and a watermelon is the highest in terms of...
And he's been a plum for me. He's been a plum.
Now, a couple of days ago, was it yesterday?
Yesterday, I think.
He sent us a little video to tell us that he was playing League of Legends, or so he thought.
Or was it a video? Was it a still?
Oh, it was a still, yeah.
Well, I was disappointed if it was a video that I never pressed play.
He did send us a video after that.
Oh, carry on.
He sent us a still of him playing League of Legends, and you said, oh, you're playing League of Legends. And I looked at it and I thought, that's not Summoner's Rift. He had accidentally started playing TFT, which is a kind of board game version of League of Legends.
Gracious me.
And I said, no, Elijah, that's not Summoner's Rift League of Legends. And he wrote back and said, oh, thank God, this is really boring. And I said, yeah, it's like basically like chess with the characters from League of Legends moving around. It's rubbish. So I said, come out of that. Go into the actual game. I sent him a little video as to how to do it. Play the tutorial. He played the tutorial as Lux and as Ahri.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be lovely to play a game?
So what? And as far as fruit goes, Dom, where would you say Elijah Wood is now?
Well, if he's played the tutorial.
The League of Legends update.
I'm going to promote him from a lemon seed to a small pear, a Bartlett pear.
Oh, lovely.
He's done well. He's not played the game yet.
Uh-huh.
He's not played with us yet. So he's not quite there yet.
I'll put him there. Well, I mean, I think once he's started, which he has done, a Jaffa Orange.
Nice. Mm. Okay, he's been promoted. Sean Astin?
He did send a thing at the same time saying, can you play it on Xbox? Otherwise, I will invest in a PlayStation.
And I wrote back, PC or Mac, and then he didn't really respond. So I think Sean Astin, for me, Nectarine Pit.
I mean, he must have a PC or a Mac.
He's on computer all the time.
He's always working things out. I'm going to say that he is a Tangerine.
Well, we will keep you guys posted, and on the fantastic day that all four of us play League of Legends together, we might bring in a watermelon to celebrate.
I love a watermelon.
But we'll keep you updated with League of Legends anyway, but this is the League of Legends in terms of can we get all four Hobbits playing.
Brilliant.
So that's it, guys. We will see you next week. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast.
And don't forget to send your emails, and we love the riddles. That's a good thing just now. I'm enjoying the riddles.
Yeah, they are fantastic.
So send emails, riddles, ideas, plans, things that you want us to eat in Billy and Dom Eat the World.
Knee advice.
Send it to thefriendshiponion@castmedia.com.
Or you can leave us a voicemail at speakpipe.com/thefriendshiponion, and we will see you all next week.
See you then. Bye bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.